me ask you something. Where do you take visitors when they come to see Boston? Freedom Trail, Paul Revere's house, Old North Church, Faneuil Hall? Also known as the Cradle of Liberty, Faneuil Hall is iconic for its role in the Revolution. Samuel Adams and the Sons of Liberty meeting there multiple times to discuss the Stamp Act, the Boston Massacre, the Boston Tea Party. An estimated 20 million people pass through the marketplace every year. But it is also iconic for its role in enslavement. And for that reason, some want to erase the name of the man who built and donated it to the city, Peter Faneuil. Three of those advocates are here with us in Studio 2 today. They have staged sit-ins in City Hall, chained themselves to Faneuil Hall, even gone on a hunger strike. Reverend Kevin Peterson is founder of the New Democracy Coalition. Pastor Valerie Copeland is pastor of the Neighborhood Church of Dorchester. And Reverend John Gibbons is the community minister for Good Trouble at Arlington Street Church of Boston. Reverend Peterson, welcome back.
Oh, good to be here.
Pastor Copeland, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And Reverend Gibbons, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
All right, so I'm going to start with not the question I was going to ask, but Valerie Copeland, you chuckled when I said, where do you bring people? And you're like, I know where this is going. This is an interesting monument that we are talking about because we know its whole history, but we visit one part of its history.
And I'm going to say, let's start with defining we. As an African-American person who's lived in Boston all of her life, I don't bring my visitors to Faneuil Hall because there's nothing there for them to see. When you visit Faneuil Hall, you see very few people of color. And in fact, I've had people question me when they have come, right? When they come on business or they come with their white friends, they'll often say, where are the black people, right? So there's no evidence of black community, black society, black history, black culture prevalent anywhere at Faneuil Hall.
So that's such an important point, Reverend Kevin Peterson, because if we think about the back and forth on this since I would say roughly 2017 when you really started to push for the change in the name at Faneuil Hall, the back and forth often is, why do you want to take away something that many can see clearly for its full truth and want as a landmark of who we are in Boston. But Valerie Copeland is saying not even that's right, right? Faneuil Hall is important for part of Boston, but not for all of
Boston. Well, it's not a takeaway. It's an add to, really. It's a way that we enhance our history. It's a way that we look at the past in order to examine the present and dig down into or engage what the future of Boston should look like. So when we talk about changing the name of Faneuil Hall, we're talking about engaging in deep conversations about race and racial reconciliation in Boston. It's not a symbolic move, but it's a move towards having deeper dialogue about the structure of racism, which exists in Boston in 2023, but certainly had some of its genesis in the 1700s when Faneuil Hall was constructed. We call it Slave Traders Hall because Peter Faneuil was a white supremacist, a person who owned slaves, a bigot. And we don't believe that it's proper for our city officials and we as citizens to support the name of a publicly owned building after a person such as Peter Faneuil. So we want to change the name. It's a little complicated. We want to change the name in order to dig deeper into what we can be as a city moving forward, as Boston approaches its 400th anniversary.
So a little context for listeners here. So Peter Faneuil, wealthy local businessman, traded in goods that were produced via the slave trade, enslaved people himself, funded and built this building with his own name on it, gave it to the city. And it's also important to note, and Reverend John Gibbons, I'm going to turn to you here, it's also important to note that actually auctions of human beings were held in vicinity of Faneuil Hall as well. I'm going to turn to you here because you're white. Today is the first day of Black History Month. We are going to have a number of conversations over the next month here on Radio Boston, centering Black voices, Black actions in our city. Reverend Copeland and or Pastor Copeland and Reverend Peterson have just situated this for us. As a white pastor, how are you talking to white communities who say, oh, great, so now we're just going to change the name of everything?
Sometimes Kevin has referred to me as a mercenary in this campaign, and I'll take that because I think that this is an issue that affects all people of all races, suburban communities as well as urban communities. I side with Martin Luther King, who said that we are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality tied in a single garment of destiny. And I would also take slight exception to your introduction, Tiziana, in saying that we would erase the name of Faneuil. We want people to know the actual history of Peter Faneuil. Yes, he was a wealthy merchant whose sole claim to fame was his wealth garnered on the backs of human beings and human trafficking. And he cited his building on the site of the first auction block for enslaved people in Boston. The building of Faneuil Hall was controversial at the time because he wanted to centralize markets in one building, and that pushed out many of the poorer vendors and allowed the wealthier merchants a space. And that continues to be the legacy of Peter Faneuil, that he has erased the history of the people that were enslaved on that very site.
So I'll turn to you, Valerie Copeland. I'm going to play a little bit of sound here from WCVB Channel 5.
Protesters staging a sit-in at City Hall in Boston. As you can see, some have been arrested hours after City Hall closed for the day. They are demanding a name change for Faneuil Hall.
So as I was preparing for today and reviewing all of the steps, starting from, you know, your first actions, Kevin Peterson, in 2017 forward, it feels, honestly, it feels striking that this much social action has made so little dent in city response. It doesn't feel like what I'm used to seeing. Can you talk about that? Because you've put yourself in these protests.
It is disheartening to have our political representatives dismiss our voices and our complaint. As citizens, as voters, as activists, as clergy, standing in the margins for justice, for equality, and all we have asked for is a conversation and a meeting. And it is hard to be in this position where we have put a lot of our physical capital, a lot of labor, planning, strategy, and work to still be in a place where we have not been able to have a meeting to discuss something that we believe is important, particularly as we've just had the celebration about the embrace, right? We cannot completely move forward without going back. And so part of this has to do with, if we talk about racial reconciliation, economic reparations, it also has to do with repairing the narrative and whose voices get to be featured in history and the erasure that continues, right? And so in order to really move forward, we really need to have a conversation about what we need to reclaim from the past, what we need to repair, so that we can have, so that we can enter into the future having dealt with and remedied some of the harm that's been done.
So I want to crystallize this moment because the sound that we played, you were sitting in at City Hall into the evening looking for a meeting with Boston Mayor Michelle Wu. That was on a Thursday. The following Monday was our Mondays with the mayor. Mayor Wu sits exactly in the seat you're sitting in, Valerie, on Monday once a month. Yeah. We asked her about this. Kevin Peterson, here are pieces of what she said to us.
Unfortunately, it's not such that I have the time where if someone just comes and camps out somewhere that will jump to the head of the line. We are very intentional about how to ensure that the priorities that I promise to carry out in this office are the priorities that I can help move forward. Team members have met with this group. I am briefed on every conversation that and every bit of information that is intended for me from those meetings, and it is just as effective as meeting with me directly.
So a very long no.
And it's not true.
And it, oh, so, okay. Is that what I was going to ask you, but do that first.
Well, it's not true. First of all, we've sent at least four different letters to the mayor, about which there could have been a response of some kind from the mayor. A form letter would and some on some level be acceptable, but there is no truth to her assertion that her team members met with us.
Okay, so she acknowledged those letters, and her assertion was that Shagun Idowu has been in conversation with you.
He walked through the protest on that evening. That was almost accidental, as he explained it. So there has been no coordination between our group and the mayor's office in terms of a sit down as to what we're trying to do. What they have described us as trying to do is engage in symbolism that has no substance, when in fact we're talking about having substantive questions about racial inequality in the city, about which she seeks to govern fairly. And without taking in this full history of Black people and the crisis that they face every day, she's not being fair. She's alluding the difficult conversations around race that materialize every day in our city. We saw on Sunday, I stood over the blood of a 13-year-old boy on Sunday in Mattapan.
We talked about Isaac Yablo yesterday.
There is no way for me to disconnect what I witnessed on Sunday, the blood on the ground, in 2023, disconnect that from the legacy of racism, of structural inequality, of the crisis that Black people have experienced since the days of Faneuil Hall. So if Mayor Wu wants to dress this up as something that's not important or that is on the margins of her concerns, then she's woefully misunderstands what Black people go through every day and how it's connected to a longer history about which I believe she has no deep connection at this point.
So a couple of things there. First, mm-hmm. I think we have to acknowledge that there is a bit of a, it's almost hard to keep the conversation going on the drop the mic moment of the bloody death of a 13-year-old. Yeah. And so I want to center that moment, respect it, recognize it, and I want to have a little more conversation on the thing that we're talking about, and I want to make it very clear that...
Well, I want to say that there's no disconnection, Tiziana, and no disrespect to you.
Yeah, and I'm attempting no disrespect to
you. But if you don't get, if you're not a Black person, if you're not a Black person, you may miss the connection that a lot of Black people will make in terms of their lived reality in this city and how there is no disconnection between the first Black people being brought here as slaves and the degree to which Black people are treated in 2023. There's no disconnection. So although you're trying to center, and I appreciate that, we're on radio, we don't have much time, but the point that Mayor Wu is missing is that there are structural inequalities embedded in the city about which she attempts to govern without paying due deference and respect to that history. And we're trying to bring it to her attention, as we did with the last mayor. So it's not personal.
No, I mean,
but we tried to do this with Mayor Walsh. And
you didn't eat for 7 days trying
right.
to get Boston Mayor Marty Walsh to pay attention to this. Thank you for that. And I'm going to turn now back to John Gibbons for just a moment, because, again, part of this conversation is, Kevin Peterson saying to me, I'm white. I may not fully understand the depth of connection of history from those moments before Faneuil Hall was built all the way to our most recent devastation in Mattapan on Sunday. That is a conversation for the white community in mm-hmm. Boston, too, who are
That's
the
right.
families that bring people to Faneuil Hall. So, with a minute left in Radio Boston today, challenge the white community for the conversation you want the white community to have this month.
Absolutely. Faneuil Hall and Quincy Market remain, as has been said, an embarrassingly white space. And that is not the image that Boston would wish to project into the future. We feel that the name of Peter Faneuil chains us to a history and, as Pastor Valerie said, a narrative that is false. We would want the history of Peter Faneuil to be known in all of its ugliness and we would hope that we have a name that would call us, beckon us into the future. And that is something that should appeal to all people, white and black, all people of color in the city of Boston and beyond.
I want to give you the last word, Reverend Peterson. We have 50 seconds left on the show.
Well, only to make this point, in terms of governance for Mayor Wu, who pays attention to polls, Mass Inc. released a poll late last year, saying that 51% of all Bostonians now agree to changing the name of Faneuil Hall. She should follow the polls or have that give her a little guidance. Last point I want to make is that
we
would not have anything in Boston called Hitler Hall. Maybe we should make a similar analogy in terms of renaming Faneuil Hall.
Kevin Peterson is from New Democracy Coalition. Valerie Copeland is with Neighborhood Church of Dorchester, and John Gibbons is with the Arlington Street Church. Thank you to all three of you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
That's the show. Tune in again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.